Okay, a long poem about a movie, The Manchurian Candidate. It's about watching a movie. And if you haven't seen the movie, hopefully it doesn't matter. The poem, if you have seen the movie, the poem isn't going to make any more sense than if you haven't seen the movie, I don't think. So don't despair as the plot fails to unreal sequentially, okay? The Manchurian Candidate, a remake. First shot for the trailer also. Bang, we see the crosshairs targeting the spineless forehead. Second shot. Didn't you hear me the first time? We know you know what we're saying to you. Third shot. They have such power over me, but Frank isn't bothered by them all that much. Ulysses lies there on his floor, a closed block with a big name. Fourth shot. Close-up of the dust jacket. Words. They have power over me. The dust jacket is orange and black, but this is black and white, so I just say it. The cover isn't part of the book, obviously. I'm not in the movie, obviously. Fifth shot for the trailer. A harpsichord on the soundtrack signals something's false. This is the 50s, remember? On top, they're hearty, fussy old ladies. Underneath, they're murderous Cold War hypnotists. On top, they're discussing hydrangeas. Underneath, they make soldiers strangle each other. On top, it's a movie. On top, the frozen war. Underneath, markets wither. Underneath, pleasure, all its eggs in one basket, explodes at the sound of shots. Underneath, you have to follow these words to the letter. You're on top. Sixth shot. At last the truth can be told. Let all the spies stand naked. I was sitting in the den watching a tape of the Manchurian Candidate, secular, married, legible, American, looking at what's showing. Let all the words be sold at cost. Let all the words be read at cost. I was playing solitaire because of Korea. The deck contained 52 diamond queens. Seventh shot. That was in the movie. But a picture is exactly where I don't want to live. Panda. Where would you like to live? China? Koala. I'd love to visit. The food, the umbrellas, the bicycles. Where would you like to live? Australia? Panda. Australia is too ironic for my taste. I'd love to visit, though. I've never seen a kangaroo. Their leg muscles must be remarkable. It looked as if I was coming out ahead. Not quite victory, perhaps, but what have we been fighting for all our lives, if not a New York where you can go into a bar in the 50s, order a beer, and read Ulysses? I saw paradise the other night. It was as easy to read as breathing and writing one's invitation to the world. In progress, Frank, surprised, very amused. It was a dream I can't remember, obviously. In a phrase, not this one. This is just an assertive, shielding echo, a deeply loved surface. Then I woke up. I was watching television. Eighth shot. The clicker and a right hand above gray couch material. Ninth shot. The gray voice never transgressing word boundaries. The plate compartmentalized. The carrot section filled precisely. Never a spatter of pureed orange slopping into the section for desire, which was filled with a clear layering of deeply loved picture. The beautiful blonde biking by, tearing off her blouse to bandage his leg, where the snake had conveniently just sunk his admittedly abstract off-screen fangs. But narrative home runs over the abyss of incoherence are America's ice cream. I saw leaden Geo Toy Raymond Shaw murder mother and father in the snap of the plot. Tenth shot. While I was waiting for the kids to go to sleep so you could nicely slip your underwear off. Oops, you went to sleep. I never meant any of this. I have not done these things, any of these things. I write for you and strangers. 11th shot. In her bra outside, summer, some are others, not her, friendly, filmy. 12th shot. I place myself in the position of the viewer, then I view. On the night in question, I was home all evening, viewing. 13th shot. Frank Sinatra's had it. The social cardboard's not worth the sweat he constantly carries around on his face. Wherever he looks, locked American lives. No writing the great book. Might as well read the ashtray. No loving the great smile. No riding the city down to bodies that can be yours for the right song. The instant aria just before the light changes. Too many cigarettes, too many buddies strangling each other. Why? Because. Why? Because the smiling Chinese totalizing science. But now he can't read Ulysses. It means nothing to him. Just another big brick of paper named after itself. When the world is weird, being bounced around on a word trampoline won't get you any rest. From in front of the VCR field in the psychic past of the Cold War, this is Bob Perlman. 16th shot. Yes, mother, every word must count. 6. Yes, father, I will count each word. 7. If any one of them gets away, then I will be alone in a locked mess. The warm curves, the grassy hills, the actual caves, I will want to write myself. Please, I'll write it myself. The way streets look from inside the house at night, either end blocked or shielded by maple leaves lit black-green by streetlights, stating my feelings of home, mouth, and ear, and leading them out to the attentive spark. I read Jack Kerouac, who is free to drive a Ford in the specific direction of heaven where art is a very good investment, although you should only say that well after the fact. In 1955, the many love the few, or at least the few are free to think that they do, and it was a very good year, the present recording its pleasure in being recorded. Frank Sinatra is rewarded with a stage full of underwear and keys, while standing up and swaying, his inward light spotlit smokily, his throat open to extort every sung syllable, the bedroom board meeting smoldering, shareholders on fire, humming along. In 1955, art is as exciting as the perfect bid, the sun-soaked home run, the victory over the others that they like to acknowledge, buy, put on the wall. Kids wait, but the early off-screen doors don't reopen. 17th shot, voiceover. The Manchurian Candidate stars Frank Sinatra as Benny Marco, Lawrence Harvey as the horrible Raymond Shaw, Janet Leigh as Benny's girlfriend, Angela Lansbury as Raymond's mastermind mother. American soldiers are betrayed in Korea, captured by the Chinese communists. After off-screen brainwashing, they are shown to the Russians. Both groups are intellectuals, quoting conflicting studies. As the common-sense Americans sit, bored but patient, in alternate shots, brainwashed into thinking they're at a horticultural meeting in New Jersey where matrons in white dresses and broad flowery hats are attending a lecture extolling scientific gardening. Quote, another modern discovery which we owe to the hydrangea concerns the influence of air drainage upon plant climate. Unquote. Slow, modern harpsichord jangles the soundtrack. The film is racially progressive. When the on-screen American soldier is black, his hallucinated matrons are upper-middle-class black. There's no plantation subtext. When Shaw is ordered to strangle another soldier, he's almost too polite, saying, "Excuse me," as he brushes another's chair. The soldier to be strangled is polite, too. It's a liberal utopia. Good manners have triumphed over competition. The Chinese are jovial and authoritative. They've perfected the procedure. They can make the Americans believe anything. The camels they're smoking turn out to be yak dung. It is to laugh, for the Chinese mastermind at least. The Russians are surly and badly in need of dental work. You can't believe what you see, but you have to look. Finally, the poem is beginning to focus. You know, we know you know what we're saying to you. Koala. I hit my head. I had a dream. Isn't that how it always starts? Panda. Maybe that's the way it starts in the West. It's not a collective form. There's no rhetorical place for people to come together. That's the way you started, but that's not the way it's supposed to start. Hitting your head is personal. Koala. I was cutting the grass and I hit my head on the branch of an apple tree, an old one, 25 feet tall, with two live quarters sprouting north and south, two dead ones east and west. It was not symbolism, only matter. If you don't believe me, you can feel the ridge of healing flesh under my head, on my head, under the fur here. It's as real as history. Panda. Cutting the grass is a fairly trivial instance upon which to balance the non-concentric circles of history. Go in, I would have said. Have a little lemonade and read Whitman or the Misty Poets. Particulars only exist by being collective. Koala. So audience, fuzzy little me in the case of your remarks, becomes crucial. Panda. When you're a nation, being cute is not enough anymore. No, an audience is a serious collective enterprise. The ironic single writer in a cage, treasonous or loyal or mad, riven by pathos, unfamiliar tears. It doesn't really matter much to the words or the world. Once the hypnosis of the singular is snapped, that is. Before, one can think that anything might happen on the page. Koala. I'm willing to bob for very small favors, balls of hard, candied poetry swimming almost ethically in the sweat of irony's personal furnace around which individuals are gathered into gendered masses in lieu of lives for all lived under the changeable blue fields of utopia, otherwise known as international justice. Panda. International justice. I think we might as well change the subject, don't you? Koala. Fine. Which do you hate more, symbolic poetry or poetry that's all language? Panda. Easy. Poetry that's symbolic. Koala. But what about poetry that's all language? Panda. Poetry that's all language makes me cry when I'm asleep and can't hear the tears hitting the pillow, I mean the top of the page. Koala. I actually hit my head. That means something. It was hot. I was one body for the duration, cutting the leaves of grass, and I saw myself walking on air, on cloud stilts of biological perpetuity and sweat of the word. I was not a nation. I was not a species. I was a speaker, fully alive, just because I liked the sound of that, the noisome hiss of this, making a made world under me undergo twisting birth and destruction, just to keep me saying what I was going to say anyway, or anything else, or nothing. So what, black hole blank? An apple, an unoriginal rhetorical sin a day, goes astray into the many minds of the many, many others who don't think this. And neither do I, neither we nor me. Am I allowed to say this? No, I say it. Thanks to the body beyond species, beyond genre, thanks to the dictionaries, the strikers, the Haymarket lexicographers, the Tiananmen Square grammarians, I say it out loud. Where was I? Where are we? Don't you love the intrusion of speech where no speech can be? Life where sounds are the slippery start to never finish but get there already anyway. Panda, did you show that to your trainer before you turned it loose on me? Koala, my teacher. Panda, I'm assuming your teacher was your trainer before he was your teacher. 18th shot. I can't remember the movie anymore. Art means throwing scraps of code to the bodies as appetite supplements. The screen is soft-wired, so the bars disappear. After the primal shot, I can see eyes painted open on the death mask of that lovely arrangement I used to call the world, America, my life, the page, the academy of the future, which, as it turns out, is in the past. They even move. They're mine. That was home. It's plain that there was time and that it took place, but its quick pleasures are now words in a language with only scattered survivors. A single word means nothing, or a line without a world. The present is full of survivors' sentences. With disoriented conviction and memory too deep for instrumental speech, swimming sinkingly toward pre-owned futures hosed down the hyperspace of capital where freedom spells the rampant logos turning attractively bemused typefaces and bodies toward the traffic. Or language it for yourself. Make your own recipes. Ironize, experiment, right, wrong, but don't forget the old pleasures, skies, turkeys, playgrounds. We know you know. Meanwhile, one drives, an open lane, a paycheck of sorts, leading to the biography glimpsed in the gas station John Mirror. Until the war's over, there's nothing to eat but information, and the new mixes with the old down through all the details. Taste. 19th shot. Who folded my clothes? You did. I did. Who watered my tears? You did. I did. Who batted an eye each word I woke? You did. I did. Who waited for me to sleep so I could wake one step further inside the world? You did. I did. Koala, to survive, you have to be willing to do anything. Anthologies, that's where the money really is, or might be, at least so I imagine from my fuzzy animal distance. Reprint the material, dominate the gene pool, rise like Godzilla and make them read you for fucking ever. Panda, if you use language like that, you'll have a hard time even making it into the La Brea tar pits. 20th shot. To be free and to be Frank Sinatra, the pinnacle artist, but to be pictured as homo ordinarius, keeping the public world private by visible quotidian heroism, that's the lesson scorching the director's desire in every shot. If you feel like arguing with the movies, then step outside. 21st shot. The Chinese mastermind has the one successful marriage in the movie. Of course, it's off screen. You can't have everything. He's really a most happy fellow. He leaves the Russian doctor spy's so-called clinic in New York after making it clear that Raymond has to murder his would-have-been father-in-law, the honest, muckraking journalist, as well as the love of his life, blonde. Don't fall asleep. This is plot. Everyone has to sacrifice. Except for perhaps the mastermind, jauntily tugging his gloves tight, saying, now he has to get off to Macy's for some Christmas shopping. Smiles the happy social smile, sans dissonance. The wife gave him a list, yay long, shrugs, what are you going to do? He knows how to get in bed with capital and let it charm his pants off. Having them, quote, tight enough so everyone will want to go to bed with you, as Frank O'Hara writes, is a youthful gesture under the dappled shade of capital's frond-like pleasances. That's one thing. But to live as a large system of control is quite another. As the mastermind leaves, the Russian stares. He just doesn't get it. He believes in history, not Macy's. Inextricable direction, totality, the concrete translucent materiality of class truth. One world, one history at the end. Meanwhile, one's provisional oneness stands with oblique conviction against the waterfall of happily pregnant wage slaves. That rainbow spray is as guilty as Sunday. Those sunny lakes, those caves of ice, those miracles of rare device forced from the deep romantic chasm of bourgeois pastoral pornographic shopping, which that fucking crypto-individualist Chinese mastermind indulges with his credit flowing past the respectful cashier like vodka down a mule's throat, or whatever. Thus, the Russian revolutionary bureaucrat, murderer, actor, placed on the verbal screen by the all-too-human history of this shot. He never gets time off. His face is a burden. Closing shot. Raymond's gun sight targets communist McCarthyite foster father's forehead, as said before, though in a novel continuum. The movie wants to reach the new world and, in the same gesture, to conclude. A narrative should hold you with concern, intimacy, but not too close, because you'll be heading out one day, pegged, looking back for the recognizable trees, the known cars, glad animal movements traded in for manageable novelty. Is the nostalgia for creation or destruction, or maybe for something continuous that hasn't happened yet? Underneath the place names, flags of private longing fluttering against the vistas, molecular revolutionaries dream of taking all desires to court and setting them loose beneath the robes of judgment. To pull the gown from knowledge, to pull the eye from noon, and not to see the catered wants of Tom, Dick, and Harry navigating the street, the mall, the clicker, and the dust. And Jane, Katisha, and those tender technocratic shoots and stumps, you and me? On screen, nations personify the pursuit of happiness, tearing families to shreds and the shreds to costumed certainties of loss and rage. Beyond the blinds, the end. Rain falling on cue, Frank Sinatra crying, Janet Leigh wordless. The days regular as sprocket holes, while decades slide by with unevenly layered minds of their own. You, hypocrite viewer, with nothing but mirrors for pleasure, knowledge, luck. My hand in yours if you read me. Those deep-programmed people glimmering beyond the evening's blocky conspiracy theories, willing their present without shooting our past to a bloody parable. Have you found a way to call them yet? Thanks.